Nikki French became a literal worldwide sensation when she did Total Eclipse of the Heart in late 1994 and into early 95. She hit number one all over the globe. Over 5 million copies of that sold. And since then, Nikki has continued to release music, continued to star in different theater productions. And we're lucky enough to have her joining us right now via Skype from somewhere in the UK, right?
That's right. In the center of the UK.
Somewhere where it's a lot later than here right now, probably, right?
So, oh, yes, it certainly is. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing over there?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. Yes, I've had a nice few weeks of a bit of a rest, and then I've just started sort of doing some gigs again, and I'm up for a theatre show later in the year. So, yeah, things are starting to move well. I'm enjoying 2012 so far.
Yeah, and you said it's really cold where you're at right now, right?
It's very cold, yes. We've got warnings that this week is going to get very, very chilly.
Nice. Well, it's 70 degrees here in Kansas City.
So. Oh, stop it. Go away. I don't want to know.
All right. So we got to start by talking about the latest with your music and everything. So what have you recently released, and then what's coming up music-wise?
Okay. Well, there were a few tracks in the last year or so, just because, I mean, the market nowadays isn't so good for selling CDs or selling, you know, sort of online or whatever. So really, with the smaller record companies like I'm with Energize, you tend to just sort of put the tracks out. They work in the clubs. They get you more work in the clubs, and that's about it. And hopefully at some point something will really kick in. Funnily enough, I had a meeting with the guys last week and with one of the producers about sort of the way forward, and we've got a couple of tracks in mind to record and work on. One I'm very excited about, but I'm not going to say what it is. So in the last few years, there's been a few tracks just sort of released either in the UK or in Europe, or I think a couple came over to the States. There was one called Ain't No Smoke, which was a little bit of a sort of sideways step for me. It was quite a rocky number, which I really enjoyed singing, and that went down very well. I did another couple of dance tracks last year, which weren't so sort of successful, really. And really just carrying on. I mean, when I do a gig, I know I have to sing Total Eclipse and so on, and it's great. You know, I'm lucky that it's a song I absolutely love to sing, so I'm very happy.
Well, good. I love your energy, by the way. The energy is great.
Thank you.
Like the Energizer Bunny, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So then acting-wise, so you told me, you know, obviously you were in Annie last year, but then you mentioned there's a show coming up you might be up for. Can I talk about some of that?
Yes, well, it would actually be quite a leading role. Again, you know, I don't want to tempt fate. The audition will be within the next couple of weeks, I think, I've been told. But I would be up for one of the leading parts, which would be a dream come true if I managed to get it. And that would actually go to sort of Southeast Asia, weirdly. But I'm very excited about that. I did a pantomime just before Christmas. You know about pantomimes?
No, I don't think. Wait,
what? No. It's a very weird British tradition where men dress up as women and women dress as men, and everything goes wrong. And it's usually based on sort of nursery tales and fairy tales. I was playing a woman playing a man. However, in our production, you knew that I was a woman playing a man. I wasn't trying to be a bloke. But it was a very funny experience, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself. You just, with pantomime, you just have a lot of fun. You know, it's not like a serious musical where, you know, you just have to behave all the time. It doesn't matter if it all goes a little bit awry on stage. So it's ridiculously laughable and great fun. And I enjoy doing that every Christmas time.
Well, and I, you know, speaking of musicals that are kind of serious, I know you've acted in my all-time favorite musical several times during your career, Oklahoma. Do you share my?
Oh yes, I loved doing Oklahoma. That was so much fun. I am a huge Rodgers and Hammerstein fan anyway. So, you know, anything by them, I just feel like, oh, I was put on this earth to do that show, sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, Oklahoma, when I first did it, I was at college, and you know, to get the leading lady role in that was just absolutely beautiful. I loved it.
And everything's up to date in Kansas City, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, you're in the right place for that, aren't you?
So we're talking to Nikki French right now. So one thing that kind of made me laugh on your bio on your website was you gave some love to your awesome English Cocker Spaniel. How's he doing?
Oh, he's wonderful. I absolutely love my dog. Sadly, I haven't seen him for a while because there was a bit of a split marriage-wise, and my ex-husband now has him and has decided that I don't need to see the dog anymore. But I still take photos of him everywhere, and I absolutely love that boy. He's a wonderful dog. He's just got the biggest character that anyone's ever known of a dog.
Well, I don't know how it is over there, but I've got a couple cats, and being a straight guy who's single with cats, you get some kind of weird looks. So maybe you should get some.
Oh, it's great though, isn't it? Animals just give you this unabashed adoration. You know, you can tell them off when you go out the door, and when you come back in, they're there for you. They're just, I love them. I'm very much a dog person rather than a cat person, but I can understand. I mean, cats can, you know, they can fend for themselves, and they can sit on your lap and things like that. Whereas if you've got a big dog, it's not going to do that. But I just love animals, full stop. So, yeah, I hope I might actually get another dog quite soon.
You should. That'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, with my lifestyle, when I'm traveling, obviously it's difficult because you need somebody to be around to look after the dog for you. But, we're working on that. That might happen soon.
You could get one and put it in your purse like Paris Hilton.
No, I couldn't. No, I'm not into those sort of dogs. No, it's got to be a proper dog.
The UK version of Paris Hilton could be Nikki French.
Oh, all right. I don't think so.
So we'll come back to 2012 later then. But so let's go way back then. So I know you began your career in music as a member of a group, and then later you were a background singer and a session vocalist. But then kind of tell us before that, your upbringing. Where did you grow up? And then, you know, how'd your passion for music kind of develop growing up?
Oh, well, I mean, I grew up down in Kent in the south of England. It's called the Garden of England because it's very rural, lots of lovely sort of fields and trees and so on. So I was brought up in a beautiful area of the country. And I always used to just sit by the radio and listen to songs and sing along to them. And I always remember my godmother one time was visiting us, and I was about 6 years old, and she turned to my parents and said, "She'll be a singer one day." And it stuck with me, and I never forgot it. And even at school, when we were going to sort of careers education classes and so on, you'd go and meet some counsellor or whatever who would expect you to say, "Oh, I want to be a policeman," or "I want to be an accountant," or something. And I would go up to them and say, "I want to be a singer." So they could never really give me any advice. But drama and music teachers, when I said it to them, they never laughed at me. They always took me very seriously. And I always had a lot of support from teachers and the schools and so on. My first recording session, I had to take a day off school. I was only sort of 14, 15 years old. And a producer had asked if I would go to London and do these backing vocals. And so the music teacher at the time recommended that I was given this special day off to do this work. And so that was my first experience of sort of trying to be a professional, as it were. And I never lost it. I always just wanted to sing, and went to college and did music and drama, which was even more suitable for me. And I just thought, oh, I want to do musicals. That's it. I want to be Maria in The Sound of Music. That's what I've been put on this earth to do. And then sort of somehow in my career just started working in clubs to sort of enter talent shows and things like that. And then that sort of stuck. And I to cut a very long story short, eventually got the offer of doing Total Eclipse. And I'd worked in studios and done demo tracks and so on, but Total Eclipse was the big sort of springboard, as you like. And I just carried on from there, and sort of the acting side had to take a bit of a back seat until the last few years, when I've decided, you know, I really want to try this. And I've done pretty well so far. I've had a few parts and worked worked hard on that. I still do my gigs, but I absolutely love working in theatre now. I really, really love it.
So the Total Eclipse of the Heart thing. So then it's, you know, 94, so that started happening. At that point then, were you like pursuing a solo career? Did it kind of just get, you know, dumped in your lap? How did that kind of come together?
Oh, yes. No, I'd been a soloist working in clubs and things for a few years by then. And Total Eclipse came along. And when it was first released in 1994 in the UK, it sort of reached the lower end of the charts, but not anything major. And I just thought, oh, well, you know, that was great. I met Mike Stock and Matt Aitken, and I've worked with them, and it was a dream come true. And, you know, we've tried, and, you know, that was great. You know, I had a great time, and I was very positive about it. And then about 2 months later, I just had a call out of the blue from Mike saying, the buzz will not die down on this track, so we're going to re-record the beginning, the music side, and we're going to re-release it at the beginning of 1995. And that's when it just went mad. It just took the world by storm. It just went ballistic, you know, and then a few months later, Critique Records took it up over in the US, and, you know, suddenly it's all starting again, and I'm getting phone calls from Fred Bronson at Billboard, who I'd met in the UK offices, saying, you know, I'll give you the, you know, this week's midweek placing. And each week it was going up and up, and then I was invited over there to do sort of 6 weeks of doing one-off shows for all the different radio stations in different states. And it was just magical. It was a fabulous, fabulous time of my life.
I mean, you had to have been kind of shocked how it took off, right?
Oh, completely. Oh, absolutely. You know, and the thing was, I would go over there and end up in another state somewhere to do a big baseball stadium with, you know, sort of 12 other acts or whatever. And I would get there and no one had a clue what I looked like. They knew this song was number 4 or number 2 or whatever in, you know, there in the charts, but they had no idea what this girl, Nikki French, looked like. So I'd get to the venue and no one would bother me. Of course, I'd then do the gig, come off stage, and I couldn't get away because everyone was standing by the railing saying, oh, Nikki French, Nikki French. And it was just absolutely amazing. The enthusiasm that the Americans give is just absolutely fantastic. I have great fun when I'm in the States.
Do you have any favorite memories of touring in the US, like during 95, like any particular shows or moments or anything?
I think possibly was one of the main ones. Well, there were a few. One of the other artists on the tour was Corona, you know, who did "This Is the Rhythm of the Night," that one.
Yeah.
And she was there. I was there with my husband. She was there with her husband and her tour manager. And there were a couple of times that wherever we were, they'd laid on sort of transport from the airport to the hotel, but it was like this rickety old coach. And we were trying to stand in this coach, and we were being pulled from pillar to post all along the road. And we had such a fun time all together. And I think one of the outstanding memories was I was at number 4 at the time. And we weren't expected to go up again. No, I was at number 5 that time. That's right. And we weren't expected to go up again because Michael and Janet Jackson were releasing Scream the following week. So the record company had said, we're expecting it to go down, but, you know, it's been a good run. And they phoned with the midweek and said, it's actually gone up to number 4 and the Jacksons have entered at number 5. So, you know, we'd done that, which was amazing. The following week, we went up to number 2, and I think they've actually been working recently, the Blessed Union of Souls.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, they were on the tour with us as well, and I remember getting to one of the gigs, and they'd all heard the latest chart positions as well, and those guys were just so happy for me, and they were so sweet, and that's a long-abiding memory. Everybody got on so well, and we all just enjoyed what we were doing.
Yeah, they're actually gone Christian now. Have you heard their new album yet, the Blessed Union?
No, I haven't. They were an absolutely delightful bunch of guys. And I read just recently that you know, they're still going strong and so on. So, you know, best of luck to them, because they were an absolutely delightful bunch.
You'll have to check out our website. We've got a ton of different interviews on there. You'll probably be like, wow, I remember them. Wow, I remember them.
Oh, I know. I did, actually. When you first contacted us, I looked at the list and I thought, oh, yes, I worked with them. Oh, yeah, I worked with her. Yeah, it was great fun.
So we're talking to Nikki French. So there's several different remixes of that song then, obviously. So when it first came out, okay, in the U.S., they obviously released the hotter version. Wasn't there a slower version of it too, though, at first?
That's right. Yes, the slower version was the one that actually took a hold in the U.K. Originally, they started with the fast one and then decided to go from the start with the sort of in the same vein as the Bonnie Tyler version. And then it sped up sort of, you know, when the chorus came in, sort of thing. And that's the one that really, really hit well in the UK. But yes, in the US, it was, I think it was the one that was fast all the way through.
Yeah.
However, when I was on stage, I always do the 6.5 minute version. So that's a long, very fast version all the way through.
So is that your favorite version then more the slower?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. To do on stage, definitely. That's the one, because it gets people going and they all join in, and it's fabulous. Get their arms waving in the air and everything.
So where did you film the video for that song then? What do you remember about that day?
Well, actually, there were two videos filmed. We did the first one, which was in sort of sepia tone, in a studio. Now, where was that? It was in Southeast London, I think. And then we did, Mike Stock decided, oh, no, we want to do a different one in colour. We'll include the band and a couple of singers and things like that. So we then re-recorded it. And the original idea was that the two would be blended together. But I think because the lady that did my hair just did totally different versions for the two different recordings, that it just was not going to work. So we ended up with two versions of it.
Huh.
Yeah. There's a little known fact.
Yeah, about that. So I'm assuming, have you talked to Bonnie Tyler before then, ever?
Do you know, I still haven't. A few years ago, I was doing, I used to do the Cardiff in Wales. I used to do Cardiff Gay Pride most years. And I was very friendly with one of the organisers who had apparently heard from Bonnie Tyler. This was about 3 or 4 years ago, who had contacted them, knowing that I was going to be on, and had said that she would like, if she was available, she would like us to sing the song together. And I thought, wow, YouTube will go mad with this one. But then she got some work over in Europe and it never happened. But that was the nearest I've come to actually speaking to her. I'd love to meet the lady, because, I mean, it's the most amazing song. From my childhood, I looked in my record collection after Total Eclipse, my version, had hit the charts, and hadn't realised that I actually bought her single back in 1983. So I was a fan back then.
What do you remember about when that record first came out? I mean, I always wondered, did you go out to the record store and just buy a whole bunch of copies for the heck of it of your own record?
No, I didn't. I didn't need to. I couldn't find it anywhere because it was sold out, which was rather nice. No, I didn't go out and buy them. In subsequent songs, there was one time I was with my mum in a little store in my local town, and she went in and the song that had been released sort of earlier that week, they had one copy of, and she took it up to the cash desk and said to the guy, I stood in the back of the store, and she said to the guy, it's my daughter, you know. And she was so proud, and he looked a little bit confused. But no, I've not actually gone out and bought my own before, thankfully. I'd feel a bit sad doing that. I'd feel a bit embarrassed in case anyone knew who it was.
That's great. So, I mean, have you been to the US recently then, or has it been a while?
It's been a long while. I've been to Brazil in South America, but not actually the US very recently. I think the last time was I was in Milwaukee for Milwaukee Pride, or their Pride. But no, I've not been back. Ooh, it's a few years now. I think it's about time we resurrected Nikki French's career over there, actually.
I think it is too. Let's make it happen. So to go back then, so the second single off the first album was For All We Know, but never really got the love it should have gotten over here, I thought. Wasn't there like some barcode error on, or something?
There
like
was a barcode error in the UK. Yes, it was released in the UK, and there was a barcode error, and we discovered that where it went in, I think it was 41 or 42, so it was outside the top 40, which is what matters. When they added up the actual sales afterwards, it should have gone in again at around 14, 15. So I missed the chance there. And I still have faxes from, well, not to me, but from Mike Stock to the company that used to add up all the sales. And, yes, the problem was that instead of an assistant in a store sort of scanning the barcode and it came up Nikki French For All We Know, it was just coming up unidentified singles. So they just put it in as single sale. So we lost so many official sales because of that. And so, yes, that sort of, you know, that was the first bit of bad luck. Over in the States, I think they chose Did You Ever Really Love Me as the second single. However, I still don't know why, but Mike did a different mix for the US market. And I believe there was a sort of a disagreement between Critique, the US company, and Love This, the English company, over who was going to pay for promotion. So in the end, nobody did. And the person that lost out was the artist yet again, because it never got promoted very heavily. It got good reviews. I remember seeing the review in Billboard, but it didn't go anywhere because nobody had any promotion for it.
Man,
but that is the big, big, big one. When I go to Brazil, they absolutely go mad over that song, and it's still many, many years later, I still say to people that is the best song I've ever recorded in my life. It's the one I love to sing, and it's the best song I've ever recorded, in my opinion. I think it's a stunning song.
Huh, that's cool. I was going to ask you that. So that's
there you go. There's one answer.
Stealing my thunder. Look at you.
I'm sorry.
So then you mentioned kind of the first string of bad luck. I mean, from how I understand things too, then like shortly after that, then your label kind of failed because you were one of the only artists really selling. Is that, you know, how did that happen? Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. And the promotions person, I was starting then to do quite a few trips abroad, which I was thoroughly enjoying. And the promotions person sort of, I think, wanted to have, you know, 18-year-old pretty boys to promote, whereas, you know, I was this, I can't even remember how old I was. I was in my 30s by this time, sort of, you know, not that slim, not that sort of sexy or anything, trying to just be a singer. You know, I was just working off my voice. And so I think this person tried to, you know, sort of didn't really try to promote me as such, and would just say, oh, well, it's very difficult to promote someone like you. You know, I used to get that comment all the time. Still, I was working the clubs and promoting the songs there, and they were all going down so well. I mean, there's one from the first album called Is There Anybody Out There, which even now I start my show with. It's quite appropriate in some of the clubs, actually. And, you know, people always – there's a couple of agents that have said to me, it's the song that should have been a hit, you know, because it's got a good feel to it. And I think Is There Anybody Out There was the third official single in the UK, followed by Did You Ever Really Love Me, which was the fourth. And by this time, it was difficult to get original songs out there when you weren't straight off the back of a previous track, you know. So it started to dwindle a bit. And I think, yes, because I was the only so-called successful artist on the label, they felt that they were being scuppered by the bigger labels, because the bigger labels didn't really want the smaller ones doing so well. And so, you know, it just all started to calm down a bit. But I was still big in Brazil. I kept going over there. That was where I was sort of making my fortune, as it were.
Well, I think you should give yourself some credit, because when I was growing up, I thought you were attractive, very attractive.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. You don't now.
it was a childhood crush, dude. classic. So did people really say that to you, though? The record label, somebody like you, they would actually say that mean stuff like that?
Someone, yes, there was someone who shall remain nameless. It wasn't Michael Matt, I have to say, but no, they did have someone there who actually said, oh, it's very difficult to promote someone like you. However, in a few months later, she did have sort of these two very young boys. They were very talented. They were handsome. They played their instruments. They wrote their own songs. And she then turned around to them and said exactly the same thing. So I don't think she stayed in her job too long. Yeah, but by then, the damage had been done. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And you just keep going. You know, you just think, well, I've still got the work. I've still and that's how I still am. You know, people often say to me, I'm probably owed tens of thousands of pounds on royalties and things. However, I just think, well, do you know what? I didn't get those tens of thousands of pounds. The company then went bust, you know, but I still work. I still work doing the job I love, you know, and hopefully bringing enjoyment to people. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah,
I've become ever such an optimist in the last few years, I have to say. I used to be very pessimistic.
That's good, because most people go the opposite way as they get older, right?
Absolutely. And nowadays, particularly, it's that whole quick fix thing. It's sort of instant stardom, and then a year later, you're dropped by your record company, and that's it. You know, with all the talent shows and so on. I love the talent shows because they encourage live singing on TV, and I love that. But you know, I've seen a few of the acts on the talent shows over here who a year after their contract starts, they're dropped immediately and they can't cope. They don't know what to do because they've had all these people around them telling them how wonderful they are and, you know, how great everything is and, you know, just not having to lift a finger and believing all the hype. And then, you know, literally 365 days later, they're dropped and they don't know what to do because they've not had to cope on their own.
Yeah, it's sad, but true.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, as I say, I don't knock those shows because I do think that they, you know, they do bring along the live singers and that's great. You know, I mean, particularly in the US, some of the artists that you've had on, you know, American Idol and things like that, they're still selling, you know, millions of copies. And that's great. You know, to find a new star is something very special.
So the year 2000 was obviously huge for you. You got to represent the UK in the Eurovision Song Contest. Can you explain what that is though, to people over here in the US? A lot of people don't know what that is.
Okay, well, Eurovision is a network of mainly European broadcasters, TV broadcasters, who there's been a contest since 1956, believe it or not, and there's a contest every year. Nowadays, whoever wins in one year is supposed to host it the following year. So last year, Azerbaijan won, which, you know, some people would wonder if it was part of Europe. I'm useless at geography. I'm never sure. But, you know, there are some countries in there who are not part of Europe, but they still enter because it's the European Broadcasting Union. And basically, it is a song contest, and each country submits their act and their song, and it's just a competition, and then each country votes at the end of the evening for the songs that they liked the best, and the points go from 1 up to 12, and then it used to be a catapult to huge superstardom. ABBA started with the Eurovision Song Contest. They are probably the most successful entry ever of the Eurovision Song Contest in terms of popularity and worldwide fame. But, you know, there's been quite a few through the years. And it's the only way that I can represent my country, really. So I'd been a fan of this show since the early days, you know, since my early days in the sort of 70s and 80s. And when I got the chance to do the show, I was, you know, it was just, again, another dream come true. It was like, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm going to be flying the flag for the UK. And it got a lot of support. And we, you know, we had the best time. Our competition was held in Stockholm in Sweden. We didn't do that well. We came 16th out of 24, which nowadays for the UK is quite a good result, but at the time wasn't. But it was an amazing experience, just, you know, being up there, singing in front of sort of 14,000 people in a big auditorium, all dressed up, you know, like they're going out to the theatre or something, because that's effectively what it is. It's the most watched programme in Europe. Each country in Europe takes it very, very seriously. The UK takes it a little bit less seriously, and quite often, you know, we've put forward a song that we think is, in inverted commas, typically Eurovision, rather than what we think is a good song. So, you know, it goes in, you know, it goes in spits and spurts. It's a great evening. It's very glamorous, very glitzy. You get some funny entries, you get some very serious entries. There's some beautiful ballads have come out of Eurovision and some great songs. But, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but it's a good song fest.
So where do you see the career of Nikki French going then over the next, I don't know, say 10 years? Are you so more focused on acting now, or, you know, what do you kind of hope happens in the next 10 years or so?
Well, I was saying to someone the other day, I love the fact that I can still do, at the moment, I can do some theatre and some TV, and also still do my Nikki French solo gigs. I do enjoy working with live music, so you know, either a live band or an orchestra with the theatre stuff. That's what I enjoy the most. I enjoy also, I have to be honest, I enjoy doing theatre and finishing at 10:30 at night, whereas, you know, the other night I was doing a gig and I wasn't on stage till 1 o'clock in the morning. But I just enjoy the variety. I do like the variety of it all. I would love, deep down, I would like to move more into theatre and TV. But, you know, that remains to be seen. I've sort of gone into the theatre side quite late in my career. And so because my CV doesn't have lots and lots of different shows on it, casting directors sometimes don't even give me an audition, you know. So I've got to get over that sort of hurdle beforehand. You know, there are some who they see my name and they think, oh, yeah, we know she can sing. We'll definitely see her. But it's, I don't know, it's in the lap of the gods. I love doing my singing and I love doing the acting. I love doing presenting. So anything that mixes all three, I'm more than happy with.
And how can we stay in touch with you? You know, as far as website, and are you doing the Facebook and Twitter stuff?
I'm on Facebook. Yes, there is a Facebook page. There is also definitely the website, which is www.NikkiFrench. Spell it correctly, otherwise you might get a bit of a shock because there's a porn star over in the US who spells it double K.
Is that right?
Double K. Yes, apparently so. do not spell it double K. It's CKINICKIFrench.com. Terry, my webmaster, he tries to keep everything up to date, but that's down to me letting him know that things are up to date. The website is still very popular, but a lot of the people on there tend to follow me on Facebook as well. So, yes, I'm on Facebook. I've not succumbed to the Twitter thing yet. I just thought, do you know what? Every morning I get up, I deal with emails, I deal with Facebook, I deal with the website, and I think that's enough. You know, I don't want to try yet another one.
You sure you don't want to tell people, I just drank a soda?
Exactly. The most inane comments come out on Twitter. You just think, do you really want people to know this? You know, it really isn't interesting.
Love it.
It's not. I'm sorry. It's really not.
Just drove my car.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes. I've just washed my face. Yes.
It's been a blast talking to you. And, you know, like I said, I love the energy and I love how, you know, down to earth you are and how you're, you know, not worried, not bitter, just staying happy and living the dream. I love that.
Yeah, no, I am. Thank you. Yeah. As I say to people, I'm, you know, I may not be a millionaire anymore ever, but, you know, I'm lucky enough. I'm doing the job I want to do and, you know, keeping going with it and hopefully, you know, bringing other people enjoyment with it. So, you know, you can't ask for more than that. I'm more than happy.
Yeah, and stay in touch. If we can ever help you, let us know, and hopefully we'll see you over here one of these days. You know,
perform. That would be great. Yeah, get them to start doing some retro shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Cool. Oh well, it's great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a great night there in the cold, and I'll enjoy the 70 degrees. All right.
Yeah, thanks very much. I think we're going to get to about -7 tonight.
Love it.
Lovely.
well, burn a fire, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay, bye.